Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you.
Today's special guest is Julie Smith. Hello, Julie.
Hello, Gary.
So Julie's a longtime photographer here at the News Tribune, so we thought it'd be a great opportunity just to have her set the camera down for a minute and just have a chat. So Julie, how long have you been here at the News Tribune?
I started in November of 1989, so I'm in my 33rd year.
Wow. Wow. She was a child photographer.
I was.
Okay, so what brought you to the News Tribune?
Actually, it was Sean Zimmerman. I used to work at Wright Camera Shop, and the employees, the photography staff, were all customers of ours, and a couple guys had left, and there was going to be an opening, and Sean persuaded me. It took him a long time. It took him several months to persuade me because I did not go to college. And so I thought I probably shouldn't even apply. But he persuaded me. He said, I can teach you a lot of the things you need to know, but you know what you need to know. You know, like, yeah. He goes, you know how to work hard. You're willing to work hard and you're willing to do what you're asked. So I applied and I interviewed with Doug Wagner and Richard McGonigal. Mm-hmm. And after a while, they decided to take a chance on me. So.
All right. Obviously, during that day, technology was a little bit different with camera equipment than it is today. So it wasn't just go out and shoot a photo and drop the image off. I mean, there's a fair amount of background work behind it as well.
Oh, there was. When I started, we had a dark room. It was down in the basement where the mail room is. Used to be where the press room is. And we were an afternoon paper, so our deadline was 10:30, 11, if we needed to push it. And in rare instances, and you tried to keep those instances very rare, after 11, because it just threw off everything. So if there was big breaking news, you know, get what you can as quickly as you can and get back here, develop the film, dry it, make a print, get it dry enough to run up here so that they could measure it, send it downstairs to be shot, and you know, make the big negative. But then we started developing using color film, so that was a little longer process, but we were still in the afternoon paper, so we had to try to come up with photos pretty early so we'd get back here and get them, and then get them scanned in, because then we had it was called the leaf scanner.
Yeah.
And scan it in, and then we had dial-up modem, and we transmitted from that leaf scanner to a computer in the newsroom where it came in one color separation at a time, and then somebody on the newsroom end would combine the images and make a color image.
Wow. A lot of work for one single image.
Right? It was a lot of work.
So it must have been like night and day when all of a sudden digital cameras came into play. And so for listeners, give them an idea of how much of a change that was as far as that back end production that you had to worry about.
Well, we got our first digital camera. People, you're going to not believe the price of this for a body only, which it was a Nikon Kodak combination. And it was a huge camera. It was $10,000 for body only.
Wow.
It had a 1.3 megapixel sensor. The sensors over the years have just improved leaps and bounds. So you didn't have the latitude, exposure, or the forgiveness that you do now. And with the Lightroom and Photoshop and some of those early software, they were very basic. Mm-hmm. But it was faster. You'd get back here and you could look at them. You couldn't use the images, though, right off of the sensor, off of the disc. They had to be converted. And then it converted them to a TIFF image. Then, after you worked on them, then you could convert them to a JPEG, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And so it was still a multi-step process, but it was quicker. So go in and do your work, and then you submitted the single one-color image instead of the three layers to the newsroom.
Hmm. You know, what really struck me, because I would have been on the receiving of that photo coming from the photo department. I was working in a different place, but it just struck me also, at that time, too, there were times when they would try to cut costs. Basically, they would encourage photographers not to shoot a lot of photos.
Correct.
Right? Because that film, or they were shooting slides at the time, was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you went digital, all of a sudden, you could just shoot. And as you say, it's very forgiving, and you get a lot more to choose from at that time.
I think we figured after 10 months that first digital camera was paid for, because
yeah,
we were using about $1,000 worth of film and chemicals a month, between $800 and $1,000.
Yeah.
dollars. So the thing is, the cards in those, the first one was a PCMCIA card, I believe is what it was. It was about the size of a credit card and about the thickness of three credit cards. And they were very expensive.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how much they held, but the images then were tiny. They were a megabyte, maybe. Yeah. So it would hold a lot of them. But there were times when you ran out of space on those cards if you were shooting for a long period of time and you didn't have time to come back and copy the images off.
Yeah.
Because one camera, one card.
Yeah.
So.
Well, enough of the geeky stuff. Let's talk about, I mean, most folks who would encounter you, they're going to see you out in the community, right? Mm-hmm. Camera in front of your face much of the time, but that's how much of your day is spent. And I always find it interesting when folks talk about what they do for a job, that for most folks, every day they kind of know it's exactly the same, or at least it's within a narrow parameter.
Right.
But I would bet for you, every day is like a new day. And it's a wide open horizon. So let's just talk about how you approach your day with the idea that every day you're expected to come back to help illustrate either stories or just what's going on in the community. So let's just take a step back and talk about how you do that.
I don't do the same thing day in, day out, but year in, year out, I do. Hmm. Last week in July is Cole County Fair Week.
Yep.
And for me, it's kind of like old home week because a lot of the kids that I went to school with, well, now they're grandparents of kids who are in 4-H, but, you know, 15, 20 years ago, their kids were in 4-H, showing their cattle, hogs, etc. Now it's their grandkids, so I still see them, but it's two generations later. There are a lot of people out there, they say, well, it's that time of the year. You're like, I see you once a year, and it's always here. But that's one thing I say. I don't do the same thing day in, day out, but year in, you do. And the other thing is, I say, hey, you like your job? And I just will say, for me, I'm sure it beats what most people have to do. Because I do go to the office every day, but I don't have to sit there. I do sit at the same desk. But it's you're in and out.
Right.
My job, as I view it, I take it very seriously. So it is a lot of responsibility, but it does give you a certain amount of freedom. But with that freedom does come a responsibility. So although I'm out of the office, a lot of people don't think I'm working, but what they don't think is work is actually work. Because if you don't have anything on your schedule, you're trying to make something happen or trying to find somebody doing something, making phone calls, sending texts, sending emails. See, what do you have going on today? A lot of what I do, though, I just drive around and see what I stumble across.
Yeah.
And sometimes I come up with some very interesting story opportunities or at least photo opportunities. But sometimes if I think it deserves more than just a photo or two, I will call a reporter and see if I can possibly get them to do something.
Yeah.
We've come across a lot of stories that way.
Well, and a recent one, I would assume, was one that was in Tuesday's paper regarding some World War II airplanes that were flying low over the capital city, and you and Ryan Pavone worked together on a package of them. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you came upon that, or he came upon it.
Well, I was out at the fair shooting the swine show when I got this very excited call from one of my longtime friends. They're like, Julie, you got to get to the airport now. He said, there's Bearcats and Tomcats and a B-25 has landed. He goes, I don't know how long they're going to be there. I said, I'll get there as quick as I can. So I got what I thought was sufficient images at the fair, and then I did rush over to the airport. On my way there, I called Jeff because I knew he would be excited about that. Right. But Jeff says, oh, I can't. I have so much on my plate. And then he called me back a minute later and said, Ryan would be available to go over. And so Ryan met me over at the airport. And for me, it was very exciting. Over the years, you see that like the big aluminum overcast come in, some of those old war planes that they've brought back to life. And you just see the veterans over there who did fly on those planes and the people just who have an appreciation of history. But that's just one of those things that somebody that I knew saw them, knew I would be interested in them. And then while I was there, I contacted Barb Calberlo, who ended up bringing her husband, Ralph, out there, who Ralph was a prisoner of war in World War II. He flew B-17 bombers, and their plane was hit, and he ejected and landed in German territory, I believe. And he was prisoner of war for I'm not sure how long. But anyway, she brought him over to the airport, and they were so kind to him, and he was pretty excited to have a chance to see those World War two planes there on the tarmac and get pushed around to see them. Yeah. So, like when the steam engines come in and you have that opportunity to share, you try to document it. There are a lot of things I'm excited about, and hopefully that excitement comes through in the pictures I'm able to share. Sometimes I can't always get what I want, but
right.
I do the best I can. Sometimes you strategically place yourself where you think is going to be a good spot, and it doesn't turn out to be a good spot. And by the time you get to another spot, you've kind of missed it. So, but sometimes you pick a good spot, and it's like, hey, I was in the right place at the right time.
You hit the lottery then.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I think that's what most folks, when they think of photography, that they think it's just, it's easy to get the shot, but it's not. You have to work it. And one thing I really appreciate about you is, and we'll talk about the fair as an example, where you have that every year you're there at the fair, but you also listen to people's stories, right? It's not just, I'm looking for the image, but you're trying to understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, and that helps really tell the story visually as well. And this week, before you went to the World War II planes, you had mentioned you were at the swine show, and I just found it fascinating, the detail that, you know, in the images, the cut lines that kind of explain things that, you know, the family relationships between the different exhibitors. And then I know you and the photographers work well talking to each other. And so then the story and the photo work well together then. And that's really, I think, when we are at our best, when those things can come together.
That is very true. And when we have reporters who it may be their first time there, I'll try to shepherd them along. Because especially if you're at the county fair and you grew up in a more urban area, this is a whole new world to you. And one of the things that I try to get it right. So I want to represent them accurately. Mm-hmm. So from their names to what they're doing. And, there's so many different breeds of cattle, of pigs, of lambs, of sheep, of everything. I try to get that information. It means a lot to them.
Sure.
Because when you have cattle farmers who raise Angus or Simmental, they're very proud of that. Mm-hmm. So to get just little things like that to work the breed in. Mm-hmm. But I've learned a lot over the years. It's just like yesterday at the airport. I should have known this, and I probably did, but it just didn't come to me yesterday. But the 13-year-old who kind of gave me a tour of the planes, he was so excited about it. And he said, this is a P-that, and that's a B-25, that's a P-7F. I said, so B's and P's, what? He said, B's are bombers, F's are fighters, C's are cargoes. I'm like, I should have known that, and no I probably kidding. Did, but I'd never put it all together.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, yeah, great. All these years I've been covering these different planes. So.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show you're never too old to learn.
Exactly.
So just getting the names correct, titles, what they're doing and why. And I've always tried to make sure that I've had plenty of opportunities to embarrass somebody, either intentionally or not. But I always study a picture to make sure. Because there's sometimes you take the picture and then when you're looking at them, you're like, oh, I didn't catch that back there.
Right.
That would be a really good picture except for that, so I can't use that.
Yeah.
Because that would be embarrassing for them and make me look bad, but I never want to try to embarrass anybody.
Right.
It's just like sometimes when you're at the scene of the wreck, like today, the truck drivers were both there, and it rained. It hadn't rained for a long time, and when it rains, after a long time of no rain, the pavement gets very, very slick.
Sure.
And until you've walked on it, you don't realize just how slick. So these two, I don't know exactly what happened, but I felt bad for the trucks because, A, it tied up traffic. It's going to slow down their workday. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to come out and clean up the sand that spilled. Work is delayed. And you just got to have compassion and empathy and just be careful of what you're doing. Be aware of your surroundings. And that's something in the early days I may have not been, but I certainly over the years have learned you always be aware of your surroundings and who's there, who might be involved in something.
Yeah.
Watch what you say, watch people's reactions.
Yeah.
Because until you've been in one of those situations, you never know how you're going to react. So
right. There's
just so much to learn and to watch for.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. There are instances where it can be a tinderbox there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Emotions are high,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's an accident, whether it's a march, whether it's a school program or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There are times where you don't realize how explosive a situation it could be.
So. And it can be the most innocuous thing and something that you just think is so cute.
Right.
How is anybody not going to think that's cute? And then somebody sees it entirely different and try to ruin your name. Talk to me first.
Yeah.
You know, let me explain. But yeah, there have been times you just don't even give it a second thought. You think, how could anybody be offended by that? But they were.
Yeah.
Typically, there's always so much more than meets the eye. You just don't want to find out the hard way. You know, I've been physically attacked multiple times. Something that you don't even realize is happening, but you're in the middle of it. And before you know it, you're being attacked. You're thrown to the ground and somebody's threatening to punch you for something that you didn't even do. Or if you did, it wasn't a conscious decision to do it. It was, they ran to the scene and they saw something. They thought you were doing something else and try to take your camera, throw you to the ground. That was scary.
Yeah.
Just, you always have to be aware, which I've gotten really bad about doing, is second guessing myself.
Mm.
And so it's like, how's that going to be perceived generally?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's such a cool picture of me. But somebody is going to see that and take that the wrong way, which that was never the intention. So
sometimes
I do second guess myself just out of caution.
Yeah.
You have to be very careful when you're taking people's pictures and you make sure that they are safe.
Yeah.
You let the supervisor or the site supervisor know that you're on site. And sometimes they'll say, we are all legal. We're correct.
Mm-hmm.
But please don't.
Yeah.
I get it. I found out years ago that after the fact, from a photo that I had taken, a local company was fined.
Mm.
I said, but if they would have contacted me to look for at the rest of the pictures, they could have seen. The guy was on a scaffolding, and he was all tied off and everything. You just couldn't see his harness.
Yeah.
And they got fined.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't know. So, I never want to be the cause that's caused any harm, damage, or trouble, or fine, or anything. And it's the same thing with the police department. Make sure they have their, sometimes they get out of the car right away and they don't put their vest on because they rush out, then they go back and get their vest as soon as they realize they don't have it on.
Yeah,
a lot of things like that. So always try to be aware.
Yeah,
highway patrol have to have their covers on if they're out of their car.
Yeah,
a lot of things you learn to watch for.
Sure
after they tell you.
So, obviously, you've shot a lot of community events, common day things that happen around with a kind of a different, unique look at it. But what are some of the big events you've covered that really kind of stuck in your mind?
One of the biggest ones that comes to mind, or the first one, is Mel Carnahan's funeral.
Mm.
Because there were, you had the president and the first lady and the vice president and the second lady and all kinds of people who you've only heard about and seen on TV. Politicians from other states, but very well-known ones. And I was standing on the scaffolding, and when they came up around the Capitol behind the caisson pulling Governor Carnahan, you see President Clinton and Hillary and Tipper and Al Gore and Ted Kennedy and so many other faces that, and it was just seemed bigger than life.
Yeah.
And the other one was when President Reagan spoke at the wall in Fulton. Whenever they presented that section of the wall to the university, and world leaders and state leaders were there. And that was at the end of my first year here. So I had never encountered a crowd that large, that packed, trying to get through there. And then you have national and world leaders right there.
Yeah.
You're just across the street from them. They had an area set up for us from which we shot. Those are the two that come to mind. Another one that will probably always be in my memory is, and I always get choked up. So Larry and Helen Siebert had two daughters on the TWA Flight 800 that crashed in the harbor in New York shortly after takeoff. Mm. And I had only met the girls once or twice, I think, but I had kind of gotten to know their parents. I was charged with going over to their house the next morning to try to get pictures so that we could scan them in and have photos and to deal with parents who had just lost their only two children, hours later and not come across as ghoulish or anything, but they were as kind and gracious as they could be in those moments.
Sure.
That has just always stuck with me. And then when they finally had the funeral for the girls, that was very emotional because it was several months later and I'd had several interactions with their parents in the meantime. It was just very emotional to cover it.
Yeah.
And to try to be fair and do it justice and not become so emotionally involved, but I'm just that way. I can't help it.
Sure.
You know, covered the funeral of Leon DeRaps. He's one of the first Missouri soldiers killed in Iraq, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know his parents. I've gotten to know them since then, but certainly at that time I did not. And to be respectful and cover a soldier's funeral and just be in my place and be respectful was first and foremost in my thoughts. There have been a lot of very emotional times, a lot of big celebrations. You know, you cover the high school teams when they win the state football championship and you're in St. Louis at the Dome and you get to see them lift their coach on their shoulders and be a part of that. Coming home of soldiers after they've been deployed for almost a year. I've seen a lot of deployments and returned. Mm-hmm. Over the years, some, you know, big celebrations when they return, but those hard moments. One, he's now our police chief, Eric Weldy. He and his then girlfriend or fiance, Eric was about to be deployed, and so they had a going away party. I happened to know, though, in advance that it was going to be a surprise wedding, so only very few people knew about it.
Yeah.
And so that day they had kind of a potluck dinner to have a going away party for Eric. And it turns out they got married, so I was there to take pictures of their wedding. It was really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And then when their first child was born, Eric got home literally hours before the child was born. And they called me from the hospital and said, well, Julie, since you took a picture of our wedding,
there you go.
Our first child was born. So I went to the hospital and took a picture of Eric and Adrian and their first son, I think it was. So they've always joked since that I was their official family photographer.
There you go, exactly.
You know, some really good moments like that, it's fun to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's part of that whole News Tribune team there, you know, that those who've been around for a long time,
right,
they really have connections in the community that go well beyond just the story or the image. You know, there are opportunities for them to make connections. And I think you, as well as a number of other reporters out there especially, that they really appreciate that trust that the community has in them to let us tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
The respect, you know, that they have for us and we have for them and their story to tell it right. And so what's the one photo, when I say what was your best photo you ever took, what would it be?
You know, I'm asked that question so much, and yeah.
So you ought to have an answer, Julie.
I don't have an answer, because hopefully I haven't taken the best one yet.
There we go. Perfect answer.
But one that really sticks with me is got to be Sister Lydia in her full habit playing tennis.
Yep.
We were still shooting black and white film then.
Yep.
But that one just sticks with me just because that picture says it all.
Right, right.
She was just... Unfortunately, she's no longer with us, but she was so full of life. And, you know, it's a hot summer day, and she's out there in that wool outfit, head covered, I mean, full. And
she was going after that ball,
too. She was very competitive.
Yeah.
So she was such a joy, though.
Last time I saw that image, folks, Julie won't have said this, so I will. She was recently inducted in the Missouri Photo Hall of Fame. And there was a display of her photos as well as others who were inducted in that class, and that photo was one of them. And it just the delight that people had when they saw that image and wanted to hear the story behind it just shows how infectious the work that she has every day in the pages we produce are. So I just wanted to share that, whether you live in this community or you just happen upon the community, the images that she produces certainly do well to show the highs as well as the lows of the community. So Julie, thank you for joining us today, and absolutely thank you for the great images that you share with us every day here at the News Tribune.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.